Hey everyone, welcome back to Google Workspace Recap, your number one source for everything workspace by the Tab Geeks Network. My name is Jesse Nolan, my co-host is Steve Larson, and we're here to help you keep up. Happy Passover, once again, to my Jewish listeners here. You can all commiserate with me not being able to drink my normal fare here. Steve is over there drinking scotch, and I'm drinking plain, well, drinking water. I also spent the day at a theme park with the extended family, so if I screw up or start speaking gibberish later on in the episode, now you know why. Steve, how's it going over there?
Good, enjoying my beverage, my usual beverage, as always.
Uh-huh. Rub it in.
And, I do need to get to the store, though, like I said, and pick up some of that yellow cap Coca-Cola to try that out. Stock up on that. Didn't realize that was a thing right now. I'm seeing that all over social media at the moment.
It's a Passover special edition. For those who aren't in the know, or haven't seen on social media, the red Coca-Colas are basically Mexican Coke. It's the ones that have real sugar instead of corn syrup in them, and that's special for Passover.
Yeah, the yellow cap, not the red.
Yellow. Some prefer it, myself included. I've always been a fan of the Passover Coke.
I think most people do. I mean, everyone raves about the Mexican Coke in the glass bottles, but it's cost a fortune to get those things.
Well, when I moved out here to Southern California, they were everywhere, and I was like, "Oh, well, this isn't special anymore." But it is special because it's delicious, and I think far better than regular normal Coke. So maybe Coke needs to make the Passover Coke year round and just make it new Coke. Let's try that.
I'm sure there's some extra cost involved, slightly, you know, higher cost
sugar
involved
compared to the highly subsidized corn syrup. Of course, there is. But it does taste better. So if you would like to have normal sugar in your Coke, go out and buy the yellow cap Coca-Cola bottles. There's your advertising. Yeah. Give us an intro or?
I was going to get into the updates, talk about the very few that we have this week. There's really only one. And then two silent ones that came out at the end of week recap post there. But as we've been seeing over the last few weeks, lots of articles in the news, so plenty of that to go through with you there at the end after we quickly get through the updates. So in terms of updates, we have the two silent releases. One is that there's some Google Meet hardware kind of updates with the Chrome OS version M103. There's some expanded language support for grammar suggestions. And then in terms of the published releases, we have the ability to use speaker separation for a more dynamic experience on Pixel 7 devices.
And meeting then of,
dynamic meeting experience, yes. And then in terms of our news updates, we have a 9-to-5 article here about Google ends updates to kill third-party assistant smart displays. That's unfortunate.
R.I.P.
The Cloud on Air with Google post about the Cloud IT Hero Summit, I think, is that coming up or is that past?
On the 19th. Nope. For once, we have it before the event.
All right. We got 9 days. Yeah.
Nine days
from the time we're speaking. Yeah.
Okay. There's a handy countdown on the site.
Yes. There is an AI blog now. I don't know if this is brand new, but ai.googleblog.com. I think it's talking about all the recent announcements specific to all of the AI topics. But this is how Project Starline improves remote communication. And then a supporting article about from 9 to 5 that I think is just talking about what Google was talking about there in that same article that they posted. Chrome developer article here about Google Chrome ships web GPU. Tech Radar, which is a not too common publication that we talk about. We don't talk about them too much, but Google's looming AI integration into search should scare the hell out of Microsoft, is what that article says. And a New York Times article here about the AI race with Microsoft, Google, and what Google is doing, choosing speed over caution. Or Microsoft and Google are choosing speed over caution here. That's what it says. And then the last article, a TechCrunch article, Anthropic's 5B four-year plan to take on OpenAI. So once again, loads of AI articles and what's happening there. I did see a few other social media posts of, I think it was Tony over at SADA, getting some hands-on experience with the Workspace AI features and functionality.
What?
Yep, it seems like it was pretty positive from what he was saying in his post. Pretty
interesting. Was that on Twitter or where was that?
LinkedIn or Twitter. Awesome. I mean, those are the two main areas that I...
between them, so...
So I think I saw that in one of the two today.
See, I was offline all of the end of last week, so I missed a lot of the things that I normally am on top of, especially his posts as well. So did not get to see that one. Now I'm looking for it.
That popped up. Yeah, so that's somewhere there. But while you're looking for that, I will try to take my time then and get through these very small updates. The first one is that Chrome OS hardware, the update for the Meet hardware. And with the M103 version, there's some improvements just with the Series 1 audio bar firmware was upgraded, Series 1 touch controller, some stability improvements, re-enablement of the Logitech Rally Bar firmware update screen, and more, as they say here. There's also a kernel version has been revised to 5.4 for GMH compute devices. There you go. And then there's also a link to the article that talks about all the updates with the Google Meet hardware, so you can keep an eye on that. But we will always kind of keep an eye on that help article if there are any future updates that that they announce that they don't put in the weekly recap post. Keep an eye on that for you. And then next is that expansion of language support for grammar suggestions. So suggestions in Google Docs and Gmail are now available in Danish, Dutch, Norwegian, and Swedish. So all the Scandinavian languages there. Well, not all of them, but four more of them. And rollout for this one is available to rep release and schedule release domains. Is already done for Google Docs. And it is rolling out for Gmail at the moment for both rep release and schedule release domains. Let's see. And then our one update of the week. That speaker separation is now available to provide you with a little bit more dynamic meeting experience on Pixel 7 devices. So this is going to be an end user setting within the Pixel 7 device in the Meet settings menu. And it'll allow the users to turn on speaker separation to let you hear where people who are speaking on the screen, kind of give you some relative location and positioning. So gives you an idea of like some spatial awareness, I guess, of where they're at. So be able to toggle that on or off if you have a Pixel 7 device. So that is me. And I often listen to meetings on my Pixel 7 device and then have my companion mode up on the screen. So definitely interested to try this one out. So this one already started rolling out on the 3rd of April to both rapid release and scheduled release domains on a gradual rollout up to 15 days for visibility and available to all Workspace and legacy G Suite Basic and Business customers. And that was one of the fastest segment of updates. Yeah, very quick. Very quick.
Other than saying like no updates this week, goodbye. I found Tony's post. Tony said, okay, we just got a preview of some of the generative AI functionality built right into Google Workspace, and he gave a mind blown emoji. He says, it's where it needs to be in the natural workflow of content creation. Can't wait to be able to say more, and of course for general availability to the benefit of our hundreds of GWS customers and hundreds more to come. So yes, please. As fast as possible. Yeah. I want in. So very exciting. Good stuff there. Already. So that's that. Close down the Twitter window so I don't get distracted, because that happens easily. Alrighty. We have a whole bunch of things in the news. The first thing here is pour one out for third-party assistant displays. And I actually missed the point where they had announced that they were going to be doing this. Apparently, this is part of a phased, I guess, not rollout, not rollback, but shutdown. They first announced that they were going to be shutting it down here. They said it was stopping major development on the underlying operating system in February of 2019, and that was only about a year after the displays themselves were first announced. Now, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, then just skip forward 30, 60 seconds in the show here, because this is not going to be relevant to you. But essentially, anybody who bought an LG Think WK9, the Lenovo Smart Display, the JBL LinkView, basically the Google Home displays that were made by Lenovo and JBL and others, are going to essentially stop working at some point. And this was apparently a relatively short-lived experiment for Google, which is both, a shame, because there were some very interesting form factors here, but also kind of like, duh. Like, I mean,
well, I mean, is it? I mean, there's so many, you know, Alexa supported devices, right? I'm like, why
is it Alexa on the screen directly? And apologies to anyone, we keep saying her name. Like, this is the Google Home interface.
I don't know if it's on the screen,
on someone else's hardware. It connects to, you can talk to, you can have the voice built in, but the screen interface is only on Amazon devices, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. I don't know. I don't have any Amazon devices. I just see a lot of devices that say they support Alexa.
Well, a lot of devices may have it built in to have you issue commands to it, or they may work by talking to Alexa, which also Google does. Yeah. There's a lot of devices have that, works with Google thing. And, look, Facebook shut down their division for making these types of displays. And on one hand, it's very Googly to work with other manufacturers to put their operating system into their equipment and let the market decide what's the best and different variety of features and form factors that are out there. And on the other hand, in this smart display market, these aren't devices people are buying every day or even every year. Personally, I probably would buy a new one every year if they put one out every year with decent upgrades for the primary device, which is in my home, which is in my kitchen, living room, dining room, central area there. But I'm also a little bit unique in being a techie, but they haven't updated this in years. And quite frankly, I need an update. I have one of them that is dying. And the reason why it's dying is because it's on my kitchen counter, which is where my kids eat breakfast and have their grubby little fingers all over it all the time. And so it's just getting destroyed to the point where it locks up. It doesn't listen and things like that. And so I'd love for them to come out with the next generation. But I think I'm just going to have to replace it.
I guess these all are... And like native Amazon device that I'm seeing on Best Buy, they're all Amazon
exactly.
displays.
So anyway, so the news here is that Google is ending the updates for those devices. They had stopped development a while back. The updates are gone, and they are now effectively dead in the water. So I guess they'll still work for a little while, but now that ship seems to have sailed. As part of Google's setup for this, obviously, if you're having devices like that, you need to have people and teams that can support these. And, with the assistant division being roped into the AI division now, and who knows what's going to happen next there, and some of the older Nest devices or the, what the hell are they called, the Dropcam devices, which was the original name before they were Nest cameras, if I'm not mistaken, those are now shutting down and not being able to be used, so a whole lot of, consolidation in that area. Now, one thing that this article does say, and I have a couple of these, is the Lenovo Smart Clock, which is a very interesting, cute little device. It's about yay big, and I'm showing on the screen here for those who are listening on audio, but it's about the size of an iPhone mini, like a small phone display, and it has a screen, and it has its own kind of custom interface. It's not the official Google interface per se, and they're cheap. They're like $40, and I love them because they're a great little internet connected clock, and I can ask Google for the weather or the time or just some innocent questions or quick questions and without having the full experience. And or maybe it is running that, I don't know, but the update here doesn't say anything about this, So it's on a different system. It's running different, a different OS, I suppose. So perhaps that will continue to live on. Also, Lenovo has continued updating that over the years. And Lenovo has an equivalent version for Alexa. So I don't know, maybe that's the future of that platform, or maybe that'll get killed at some point as well. So anyway, apologies to anybody who doesn't have those devices, but that's what's going on there.
Sorry, I'm looking ahead at the other advancements in devices in the news article here with Starline, and this looks amazing. We'll get to that in a second.
But... speaking of the other side of the hardware research teams, we'll get there in a moment. The next up is the event Google Cloud IT Heroes Summit, and I love this name because, well, I have a podcast that I really need to get back to recording, or YouTube show / podcast called Heroes of IT.
And so, familiar.
It does. I've always loved the IT Hero name, and if you look on my microphone over here, you'll see it says IT Hero, and I have it on a shirt, which I'm not currently wearing, but obviously I've been using this brand for a while, so Google, call me. Anyway, this is going to be a global event, but it is, you know, streamed, of course, which means that you can watch it as it happens or after the fact. They say on here, innovate, optimize, secure, comply, and track trends, all on a tight budget while keeping your team motivated. It's a Herculean task. Tell me that again. Celebrate your feats and learn from other IT leaders who have successfully challenged the status quo. Join this event to unleash your superpowers like AI innovation, financial resilience, developer velocity. Ooh, developer velocity, that sounds cool. And more. Just think, you could reduce infrastructure costs by 85%, improve developer efficiency by 45%, and deploy applications 2.6 times faster. With a little asterisk on there, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Let's go. Should be interesting. Some interesting people on here that are going to be talking. Obviously, like we've given the caveat before, it's going to be a bit salesy, but at the same time, it's always good to attend these and see what Google is pitching, what they're talking about, what's important to them, and what they're sharing in terms of what other companies have done. There's always things that you can learn from them. So if you are interested in all of those things, that sounds interesting to you. April 19th, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific PDT, because daylight savings time and all that jazz. And if you're located in EMEA, Europe, Middle East, Africa, you can click on the link in the article to view summit events in your time zone. Alrighty, onward. Project Starline. So this is something that survived the cuts. It is still an ongoing development project. Google is still investing in it, and it makes sense because, quite frankly, as far as video meetings go, this is looks amazing, looks incredible. It already looked incredible, and it's only continuing to seemingly get better. So pretty excited about this one. I've got two articles here for you. One is from the Google Research blog directly, which, as Steve mentioned before, it comes from the ai.googleblog.com side of things, and then I also have another article from 9 to 5, which is more of an article, you know, newsy article, as opposed to a research blog post, which can get a little bit in depth, which, if that's what you want, great, go for it. If not, if you just want the headline, then take a look at the 9 to 5 article. One of the things that jumped out at me when I was going through this that they talked about is something that I've never really heard of before. They talk about a Zoom exhaustion and fatigue scale, ZEF. Steve, have you ever heard of this?
No, I have not, but I've experienced it.
I've experienced it, exactly. That's what I was going to say. So first, I was reading this, I was like, huh, that describes like most of the meetings I've been in on, you know, Zoom and whatnot. So I had to click on this and be like, whoa, what the hell is that? So apparently in 2020, and this is the abstract from the Science Direct article that talks about what this is. Editor's note here, apologies for the non sequitur. My camera died midstream and we were able to pick up right where we left off. So back to the show. All right, I was talking about the Zoom exhaustion and fatigue scale before my camera cut out and everything went to hell. I don't know what happened there. But back in 2020, video conferencing went from a novelty to a necessity and uses skyrocketed, yada, yada, yada. We know all this shit. There's a scarcity of academic research on the psychological effects and mechanisms of video conferencing, and scholars need tools to understand this drastically scaled usage. So the paper here presents the development validation of this scale, and they are or have developed a set of interview prompts based on similar work or previous work in media use, and essentially are trying to figure out how exhausting it is to be in a Zoom meeting and what that does to us, you know, frequency, duration, and they say burstiness of Zoom meetings. I don't know what burstiness means, but okay. Essentially, this is defined as the intermittent increases and decreases in activity or frequency of an event. Okay. Burstiness of Zoom meetings were associated with a higher level of fatigue. Second, fatigue was associated with negative attitudes towards the Zoom meeting. And they go into future directions for validation and expansion of said scale. So Google is using this scale to gauge their participants in their testing as far as how exhausting it is to be using Starline as Starline? Did I get that right? Yes, Starline. I was like, Starlink? Starline. Okay, in terms of using Starline versus just a regular Zoom meeting, what they found is that participants reported significantly less video meeting fatigue on the ZEF scale, 31% less, and had faster reaction times, 12%, on the cognitive task after using Project Starline compared to traditional video conferencing. On the increased attentiveness front, they asked participants to write as much as they could to remember about each of the conversations, one in Starline, one in traditional conferencing, and participants wrote 28% more in this task by character count after their conversation in Starline. Yes, Steve?
No, I'm just listening. Just enjoying, astonished. Enjoying the statistics.
There you go.
Taking them in.
It is a research article, after all. And then they also found that participants spent a significantly higher proportion of time looking at their conversation partner's face in Project Starline, 14%, instead of in traditional video conferencing. In fact, visual attentiveness in Project Starline mirrored that of the in-person condition. Participants spent roughly the same proportion of time focusing on their meeting partner's face in the Project Starline and in-person conditions. Now, I am curious, for those of us who are have aspired to kind of perfect the experience of meeting with somebody in Zoom, and either does one of the following: either only looks into the camera and occasionally glances at their screen for cues and things like that, or positions their camera so that they can always only look into the face of the person that they're talking to, similar to like a picture, which is what I have with Steve right now, so that when we're having a conversation, it's easier for me to look like I'm actually staring, you know, into the camera. I would be curious in terms of where we would fall on such a fatigue scale, because we're a little bit more natural at this. We've been doing this, you know, way before COVID. We're old hands at this whole virtual meeting thing.
Yeah, it's a little different for me. Like what I do to be more engaged with, where when I have to be more engaged with calls, I'm actually walking around the room, and I just have.
And is your camera on the whole room?
Yeah, it'll just be on the whole room. Oh, okay. So I'm not even really looking back at the camera.
So you look distracted.
I'm walking around and thinking and talking and doing stuff. And if I don't have to be in a doc or looking at something, I'm walking around and talking, and that's kind of how I communicate better. And even when I'm doing, calls, if I'm doing telephone calls, instead of sitting down somewhere, I'm going to be walking around on that phone call and talking,
that's right. So yeah, I traditionally have been a pacer on the phone, and switching to video, I don't do that as much, certainly. And obviously it depends on who you're on the call with. If somebody's casual, then running around or walking around in the room, putting things away, or just, pacing back and forth or whatnot. But unless you're in a meet room, that's, it's a different experience. So, I don't know. I wouldn't do that certainly on most of my business calls, but personally.
But wouldn't you say that when you do that, though, you're more engaged, more like involved in the call when you are walking around and talking yourself, like your personal engagement is higher then?
In which?
If you're walking around.
No, not anymore. I would say that when I was on the phone, the need to walk around was because that helped me to stay focused. But on a video call where I'm talking and the person is in front of me, I actually notice that I am more engaged because I am looking at the person that I'm talking to, and there's nonverbal cues to play off of instead of having to have them all in my mind and visualize them or try to read off of intonations and things like that. Right. Far worse than just non-visual cues of watching somebody when you talk to them.
Yeah.
Nonverbal. Yeah.
It would be ideal. It would be more ideal. Like I usually have the calls on my phone, so I don't have the large visualization of the person or people or whoever's on there. So I guess that would potentially change like how I'm looking back at it if I did have it on the big screen. Looking back at the
just, but that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons why I also don't want such a big screen, is because my camera is going to be, you know, way up higher as compared to, I mean, for of the way that we're recording this show, I actually have my camera on a tripod in front of my monitor, and my monitor is 2 or 3 inches taller than that, but my normal webcam from my computer is on top of my widescreen monitor here, and it is not ergonomically correct, nor is it as visually perfect as this camera is, you know, in terms of what's captured in the frame, because I want it to be exactly the same every time, and I want to be more eye level with the audience so that I'm actually, you know, having a conversation with all of you instead of you know, looking off into the distance. But when I'm on a call, unless it's a really important call, in which I will break out this camera for it, having it a few inches off center isn't, you know, higher up isn't that bad, and almost gives a little bit more of a natural approach because that's how everyone else has it as well. But I will say that I do make a point of positioning my video frame of the person I'm talking to in the center of the screen underneath my webcam pretty much as close as possible so that I can – it does feel more natural. Now, I will say – this is an interesting thing I just thought of that I will add to this – is ever since I've gotten the Samsung whatever the hell this thing is called, the 49-inch ultra-wide here, the Odyssey, I've been able to open up my Google Meet calls full screen to where I have a big tile of one person, a big tile of another person, a big tile of a third person, and it's almost like, so picture two 27-inch screens side by side, and then breaking out your three other people on the call that way, or two other people on the call, whatever it is. That actually feels, as far as a natural engaged meeting, that feels more natural because their heads are normal size. They're as big as my head, essentially, and I'm turning to face each of them. And I think that's also going to be an interesting approach going forward as we get into, you know, Starline and future projects of translating how we have our meetings at home into how you would meet with somebody as larger screens become more affordable and more ubiquitous, that it's that you will likely end up having embedded cameras on more points so that when I turn to face somebody over here on my left-hand side, I'm actually looking at them and the camera picks up me facing that direction versus seeing the side of my face slightly as I am turned facing them. So I think that's going to be an interesting approach moving forward, and my two thoughts on that. All right, that was quite a bit about Starline, but we're looking at the future, possibly, of video meetings here, and I'm sure that if Google's working on it, then somebody else also has some research dollars going towards it as well. So looking forward to that. All right, next, a opinion piece here on TechRadar. This is from Lance Ulanoff. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I follow him regularly on Twitter and usually has very good things to say. Google's looming AI integration into search should scare the hell out of Microsoft. His opinion, Bing, brace yourself. And anybody who's a regular listener of this show will know, hey, we agree. Basically, Google's coming from Microsoft, and Google's got a lot of power to bring to this. And he quotes Sundar Pichai saying, will people be able to ask questions to Google and engage with LLMs in the context of search? Absolutely. And basically what he's saying here is, hell yeah, search is going to be powered by Google's version of ChatGPT, whether it's Bard or some other evolved version of it or whatever it is. They're already testing products that are going to integrate this. And there's a Wall Street Journal article, which I should probably link here as well, which mentions that Google is already testing products that have chat integrated into search, or search integrated into chat, utilizing the power of Google. So definitely going to be interesting there. And continuing on the AI discussions, New York Times article, which is very in-depth, and I believe I have the free link on here, so anybody who wants to read this, even if you're out of New York Times articles, because they only give you like 2 or 3 free ones per month, you should be able to click on the show notes here. But this was just published this week and goes into pretty in-depth here, talking to some Google employees who tried to stop Google from launching an AI chatbot. And on the other side, 10 months earlier, similar concerns were raised at Microsoft by ethicists, I can't say that word, and other employees. And kind of, you know, the overall what's going on in terms of, yes, it's super urgent to build new AI and large language models and what's going on here. But maybe we should take a step back. Maybe we should slow down. Some people are concerned that they're, you know, we're not taking the appropriate steps to make sure that the AIs don't go, I don't know, thermonuclear and launch World War III and become Skynet. I don't know. But essentially it goes back to talking about something that we've mentioned before, where Google's previous top ethical AI researchers, Timnit Gurbu and Margaret Mitchell, Google stopped them from publishing a paper that was saying that essentially these language models that were used in the new AI systems could spew abusive or discriminatory language, among other things. And I think it's safe to say they were right. We found that out pretty quickly. Anyway, if you're interested in all the details here, go and check that out. I'm not going to continue banging home on this topic too much in every single episode, but I will feature one last one that I thought was very, very interesting here, and this is talking about Anthropic. And for those who haven't been listening to the last couple episodes, Anthropic is a startup that was founded by former OpenAI employees who left, and I believe what they left was over the direction of AI development. And they have something, a chatbot that they built called Claude. Now, why is this interesting to all of you? Other than the fact that it is AI, is because, as I mentioned before on the show, Anthropic was invested in by Google to the tune of $300 million, and a similar deal to Microsoft's, where all of their computing power is going to come from Google Cloud, as similar to ChatGPT, exclusively using Microsoft Azure. This is a lot of very interesting information here, and if you're looking at the next 4 years of, theoretically, the possibilities of what's going to happen and where Google is trying to go with AI, this is based off of their slide deck for raising funding before Google invested in them at a $4 billion valuation, and goes into the capabilities that they want to do. But essentially, they're building a frontier model as a, quote, next-gen algorithm for AI self-teaching, and it's claims that it has developed a constitutional AI. The article explains that at a high level, constitutional AI seeks to provide a way to align AI with human intentions, letting systems respond to questions and perform tasks using a simple set of guiding principles. And yes, that's a little bit scary. Three laws, anybody? But I think that this is an absolutely fascinating space. And, you know, I was discussing actually with my wife earlier today on the way to the theme park, the precipice that we find ourselves here in terms of the massive jump forward that is about to occur in the world of business and technology. There have been only a few other times throughout history, the printing press and whatnot, that have been such monumental jumps forward. The internet obviously also being one of those. Now, part of our discussion was the fact that the coming AI evolution here, or revolution, is not so much of a revolutionary product that it is a completely brand new technology, more of a layer on top of the internet and the technology that we already have today. But I think that it almost holds the same weight and leverage as such an impactful product, because similarly to how those other tools democratized and made available information and knowledge and communication, you know, this tool is going to completely do away with a lot of the busy tasks that take up so much of our time, which will then free ourselves to get busy with things that are, you know, more important, or the more advanced things, or improving ourselves further as a race or species and so on. So, Steve, what do you think about that? Have you thought much about the massive potential here of AI and what we're looking at going forward?
I've started to use it and think about it a little bit more recently, as I'm, going through day to day. You know, I've got a few emails here where I'm thinking, oh, it'd be nice, like, hey, you know, just write the response to this email for me. Because, like, I don't really want to write the response, but I'm sure Google could figure it out and, like, write something that sounds good, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like responses to, you know, someone's email, or, you know, either business related or personal related. And also, you know, I actually wrote up a question to Bar today. I said, write a IT contract proposal that includes these things. Based in, the state. And then, boom, I had a contract now for, IT service contract.
Done that too. Proposal,
that was all
so
written.
On.
Done, yeah.
Yep.
So, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because it, you know, I could have gone out and, you know, Googled, you know, support contracts and try to piece things together and do stuff, but I just wrote this simple sentence and it was there, and like the whole structure was there. You know, of course, it wasn't perfect, but it was. It gave me the whole structure and the format that I needed, with everything, all the basics in it, that I could then just add on to and, you know, extend upon, and save, right, you know, probably a good hour of time right there by just doing that.
Imagine if it was saving you an hour of time every hour or two every hours
task,
of work.
Every task, right.
Every task that you sit down to do, you'll be able to do 50 tasks compared to being able to do 10 previously. And higher level tasks. I was, like I said in last week's episode, I was creating a graphic for our sister show, SaaS Showdown, and I was making a graphic for defining cloud security posture management, which was their topic of the last show. And I've never heard of this term before. The hosts have never heard of it before, and they were defining it on the show. But I wanted to throw it up there to kind of, you know, give a depth of what this was and what was coming. And I literally just put the text cloud security posture management into Canva, which is the design tool that I use for it. And I hit expand, and boom, it gave me the definition for it. You know, 9 different things here, and I checked it, sure, but it was done. I didn't have to go look for them. I didn't have to copy them from anywhere. I didn't have to type anything. I just clicked, and it was there. And then click download, and I
put it in the video. Using that term to find an image that was, you know, relates to the topic. Is that what it was? Because you said
no, it wasn't even an image. It was, I'll throw it up here. It's just the title of the show, like I normally do for other graphics, and then the words cloud security posture management, and then it lists 9 different things that are part of definitions defining cloud security posture management, different things that you can do for cloud security posture management. So. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was super awesome. And again, similarly to your story, it saved me, you know, what, 15 minutes, 10 minutes finding a good article that had a decent definition of these things that you can do, and then copying and pasting and putting them where they are. And sure, we can get into the issues surrounding, you know, IP rights and copyright, and how, especially when it comes to graphics, how all that was done. But at the end of the day, this is what we're looking at. This is where the power comes from. It's saving enormous amounts of time, and it's just you and me. And, you know, we're two people. Imagine doing this over millions of people, how much time we're going to save and how much faster everything is going to be able to be done. And a similar thing happened when DSL went, you know, broadband, and then cable, and then fiber. Like, you know, the fact that we have all of the content that we have on YouTube is possible at this rate and at this speed only because I can upload it, a gigabit per second. So anyway, I think that that's phenomenal and tremendous. And that's the last thing I had to say on that for now, because we will certainly be talking more about AI as this continues going on. This is a never ending every week. It's just going to be, we're just going to rename this the All Things AI Show, or maybe we'll start a second show, All Things AI, because quite frankly, Google will get back to work on Workspace dedicated at some point. We'll have a lot more things to bring everybody going forward. So be sure to give us a thumbs up and hit subscribe. You know what to do. You've been here before. We're also over on Twitter at Workspace Recap, our website, workspacerecap.com. Leave us a review if you're over on the podcasting side. Thanks for listening. We appreciate all of you. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time on Workspace Recap.